ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। यावलिङ्गान् वितो ह्यात्मा तावत्कर्म निबन्धनम् ततो विपर्ययः क्लेशो मायायोगो नुवर्तते।
As long as the spirit's soul is covered by the subtle body, consisting of the mind, intelligence, and false ego, he is bound to the results of his fruitive activities. Because of this covering, the spirit's soul is connected with the material energy and must accordingly suffer material conditions and reversals continually, life after life. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The living entity is bound by the subtle body consisting of the mind, intelligence, and false ego. At the time of death, therefore, the position of the mind becomes the cause for the next body. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram. At the time of death, the mind sets the criteria for the spirit souls being carried to another type of body. If a living being resists the dictation of the mind and engages the mind in the loving service of the Lord, the mind cannot degrade him. The duty of all human beings, therefore, is to keep the mind always engaged at the lotus feet of the Lord. Savai mana krishna padaravindayo. When the mind is engaged at the lotus feet of Krishna, the intelligence is purified, and then the intelligence gets inspiration from the supersoul. Tadami buddhi yogam tam. Thus, the living entity makes progress toward liberation from material bondage. The individual living soul is subject to the laws of fruitive activity, but the supersoul, Paramatma, is not affected by the fruitive activities of the individual soul. As confirmed in the Vedic Upanishad, the Paramatma and the Jivatma are likened to two birds are sitting in the same body. The Jivatma is enjoying or suffering by eating the fruits of the bodily activities. But the Paramatma, who is free from such bondage, witnesses and sanctions the activities of the individual soul as the individual soul desires. This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, Text 47.
Srila Prabhupada begins his purport. The living entity is bound by the subtle body, consisting of the mind, intelligence, and false ego. In today's translation, we find Shukadev Goswami quoting Hiranyakashipu. Because of this covering, the soul is connected with material energy and must accordingly suffer material conditions and reversals continually, life after life. In other words, it is not an option. Dukalayam ashashvatam. Abrama bhuvanaloka punar avatunorjana mamupetito konteya punar janmana vidyate. This material existence, from its highest point of Brahmaloka to its lowest Patala Loka, they are places of suffering. They are places where birth, old age, disease, and death are inevitable. That cannot be changed. Human society has struggled since time immemorial to create some material solutions to these problems. But it's like trying to be in the ocean and not be wet. You have to get out of the ocean if you want to not be wet. Suffer material conditions and reversals. Whoever we may be. Hiranyakashipu, just after this verse, he's a good graphic to see example. So powerful, with such mystic siddhis. Haribol. Will I see him? Are you in town? Thank you very much. Haribol. The position of Hiranyakashipu, he defeated Indra. He had no opposition. All of his enemies were acting as his obedient servants. Even the great Brahmins and sages who can put curses on you were bowing down at his feet. If he wanted the sun to shine at night, he just ordered Vivaswan, shine. Vivaswan counteracted all the laws of nature just for Hiranyakashipu. If he wanted rain, Indra, rain. Yes, sir. Yes, master. Rain. That was his power. And what was his wealth? He had conquered the heavens. And what was his prestige? Just by his moving his eyebrow, even the greatest demigods and warriors shook with fear. Very significant. But yet, reversals. Whatever you do, something's going to be there to create misery. His own son, his favorite son, becomes a devotee. That was too much.
And actually, his son loved him more than anyone else in the world. People feared him, but nobody loved him. By power, by prestige, you may gain fear from people, or external respect, but inside they're usually envious. But you cannot get love. Not real love. Prahlad loved Hiranyakashipu more than Hiranyaksha, who was roaming through the universe to conquer for his brother, more than Hiranyakashipu's own wife, who had an amorous relationship with him. Prahlad actually loved him. If it wasn't for that love, he would not have taken the risk to speak so boldly in his presence. But Hiranyakashipu, blinded by his false ego, could not understand that love. And he took it as a great threat. Historically, in terms of religion, we find this continuously, that those who truly love are seen as threats and enemies to people who are, whose intelligence is distorted by the false ego. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's the Lord. He loved everyone.
Yes.
And yet those Brahmin, those young Brahmins, they were blaspheming him. They were threatening to do physical harm to him. And he loved them so much. He gave up his wife, his mother, his wonderful home in Navadvip, took sannyas just to reach the people who were blaspheming him, just to reach the people who were rejecting his love. Haridas Thakur, why is he the Namacharya? Not only because he was chanting 300,000 names a day, because other people somehow or other may be able to chant 300,000 names a day, but it was his character that made him the Namacharya. He was so humble, he was so tolerant, he offered all respect to others, and he didn't care anything about being respected himself. He was not only chanting, he was preaching the glories of the holy name because he loved everyone. He didn't care whether one was a Hindu or a Muslim or an atheist or a Jain or a Parsi or a Christian. He didn't care any of these things. He loved the soul because he loved Krishna. And he wanted to give everyone that love. And Hindu Brahmins hated him. Muslim Qazis hated him. Agnostics and atheists hated him. They threatened him. They blasphemed him. They sentenced him to death. They tortured him. And the whole while, he loved them. Spiritual love is unconditional, not only for God, but for every living being. Because every living being is part and parcel of God. If you have unconditional, unmotivated love for Krishna, that will extend toward everyone. And he was willing to make such sacrifices to show that love. Therefore, Haridas Thakur is sometimes compared to an incarnation of Prahlad. Vasudev Dutt, when he prayed, let all living beings go back to Godhead. Let me take all their karma. Perpetually suffer hellish conditions. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, this is not a surprise you're speaking like this, because you are Prahlad Maharaj. What does that mean? That means he loves everyone. But from Hiranyakashipu's perspective, and from the perspective of two people too much infatuated by their materialistic ways, anyone who preaches the truth becomes a threat, an enemy. Bhagavad Gita says the quality of a devotee is the devotee has no enemies. But it seems a contradiction, because devotees always have enemies. So why Krishna says he has no enemies? That means in his heart there's no enemies. Krishna's telling Arjuna a devotee has no enemy. And at the same time, he's on the battlefield saying, these are your enemies, kill them. That's why we need purports. And Srimad Bhagavatam says the only enemy for anyone is their own mind. And this was exactly what Prahlad Maharaj hated more than anything else. This distinction between friends and enemies. Yes? Of all the things in the school that he challenged, Sanda Anamarka, the seminal sons of Shukracharya, this is what he really didn't like. He could have complained about so many technicalities about education and different cultural, social lessons he was learning, but he said, I cannot tolerate this idea that you're teaching that this is your friend and this is your enemy, and how to deal with your friend and how to deal with your enemy, how to conquer and exploit your enemy and how to somehow or other keep your friend and, you know, utilize him or her according to your needs and your wants. I cannot think like this. For me, there's only Krishna and Krishna's children. Everyone is my friend. The only enemy is the mind that distorts our ability to see Krishna everywhere and in everything. So yes, Krishna's telling Arjuna, you must kill. You must fight. Now fighting on a battlefield means you have to distinguish between friends and enemies. But he's doing it in the spirit of a surgeon, not in the spirit of a selfishly motivated person. A surgeon loves the patient but hates the disease. The disease is the enemy, not the person. Just like if you have malaria. The doctor, you can die if you're not treated real fast. Yes? Aggressive. So the doctor gives medicine to kill that disease. It's an enemy. You can't be sentimental about such enemies. You have to kill it. You have to attack it. But it's with compassion.
One of my very dearest godbrothers recently had cancer. They opened up his liver to see what was inside, and they saw this horrible tumor. And they said, you know, we have to take it out. But then they couldn't take it out. So they said, we have to take out your whole liver. Otherwise, you're going to die real soon. You have to get a liver transplant. That means that tumor's an enemy. So in Bhagavad Gita, what was the enemy Arjuna was fighting? Avidya. Ignorance. Ignorance of Duryodhana and his people. The ignorance of his... That he's not this body, but he's the spirit soul. Now, please know, Duryodhana, similar to Hiranyakashipu, was not just, you know, some ignorant person of philosophy. He knew philosophy. He went to the same school as Yudhisthira and Arjuna, the school of Dronacharya. He was teaching him to fight with weapons, but Drona is also a Brahmin. You know he's going to teach them Vedas as well. Yes? It wasn't only, you know, shoot this. He was giving purports to the lessons. And Bhishma, the great Mahajan, he was equally teaching philosophy, culture, morality to the Pandavas and the Kurus. Duryodhana got the same education as Arjuna. But he was envious. He was ignorant. He was only thinking in terms of Janasya Mohoya Mahamameti, I and mine. And like Hiranyakashipu, could twist the philosophy in such ways to suit their own purposes. It's very dangerous. A person who doesn't know is not as dangerous as a person who knows but exploits it. So we find here Arjuna is telling, Krishna is telling Arjuna, you must kill the enemy of ignorance and deliver these souls, liberate them all for their own benefit. Kurukshetra was like an operation theater. Yes, to love means to attract enemies. If you're sentimental, you'll still have enemies. Whatever you do in this world, you will have enemies. And reversals and sufferings. Because it is how material nature has been created. And the root cause of this suffering is being explained here, is because we forget our relationship with God, we are bound by this subtle body of mind, intelligence, and false ego. Liberation means to be liberated from the subtle body. As long as we have attachment to this subtle body, we must suffer repeated birth and death. Now, you cannot see the subtle body with your gross senses. Just like you cannot see the wind. Our acharyas give an analogy that just like a fragrance is carried by the wind from one place to another, yes, it could be a good fragrance,
could be a miserable fragrance. You don't see it, but you could smell it. How is it coming? Yes? The wind carries it. In the same way, the subtle body carries the soul from one birth to another. The Padma Purana describes there are 8,400,000 species of life. Why have they been created? That's the most important thing. We can study through science and biology, you know, what are the different species of life, how they're living, how they're existing, how they're mating, how they're defending. But the most important question is, why are they there? And there's only one person who knows why they're there. The Creator, who made them. He has a reason for everything. Everything has a deep, profound reason. The reason there is to facilitate the karma of the soul. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he explains that this is evolution. When the soul enters into the lower species of life, by the natural process of evolution, it raises from one species to the next, to the next, to the next, until ultimately it comes to the human birth. And then it has the free will to decide its own future destiny. The lower species cannot decide anything. They're just going in a natural order. Srila Prabhupada says that Charles Darwin stole the theory of evolution from the Padma Purana. Now, this is very interesting. He was from the British area, yes, Charles Darwin. He was from British area. And during the time of his life, India was under British rule. And so many of the educated people were exploring the different teachings of the Vedas. Yes? So he stole this concept of evolution from Padma Purana. But, Prabhupada said, he distorted it with his own mental speculation. And because his knowledge has such power, when you distort that knowledge, it still has so much power. Just like Hiranyakashipu, he's speaking Vedic knowledge, but because he distorts it, what he's speaking has great power. All of these demons we read about in the Puranas, they're not just people who, you know, go to the gym and get, you know, strong. They're people who, because they know the Vedas, they understand how to perform tapasya, what yajnas they're supposed to perform, what charities they're supposed to perform, and how to access powers from demigods. They're mystic yogis. And we find all of these, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, all these people, study the tapasyas they performed. Part of their tapasya was total morality, total mind control, total sense control, celibacy. All these things were there. That's how they got their powers. But then once they get their powers, then enough with all of that tapasya. But they would be fasting.
They would be giving charity to Brahmins. They would be doing everything right when they were performing their tapasya. They weren't engaging in illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, or meat eating. They gave up intoxication, meat eating, gambling, illicit, all these things. They were living very pure, moral lives. And they were giving charity. And they were doing just exactly the proper sacrifices or yajnas to please the demigods. They knew the science because they knew the Vedas. And therefore, they were getting mystical powers. Ravana was given benediction. You can change into any form you like. And no one except ordinary human beings can kill you. Because he considered it to be like admission of weakness to ask for the benediction that human beings can't kill me. It's like if you approached Brahma and prayed, please bless me that ants can't kill me. People would say, what's nonsense person? He's afraid of ants? It's against his prestige. So his own prestige is what killed him. Yes? He had too much prestige to even ask for the benediction of a human killing him. So a human killed him. Ram appeared like a human. Hiranyakashipu. So many benedictions he gained. Such powers. Because they take knowledge, Vedic knowledge, the highest, most powerful of all forms of knowledge, and they distort it. Very, very dangerous. Srila Prabhupada, more than he attacked materialistic people, he attacked people who distorted Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada would quote that Krishna says that, Arjuna, you can understand this teaching because you are my friend and you are my devotee. So Bhagavad Gita is for friends and devotees. Prabhupada said, if you want to give your own commentary, then write your own book. No problem. Just write your own book. But don't distort Krishna's teachings. If you're not a friend and a devotee of Krishna, Prabhupada said, do not poke your nose in somebody else's business. And how people can get millions and millions and millions of followers. Because they're quoting the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, the power of Bhagavad Gita. Srimad Bhagavatam, such power. Even if a Mayavadi gives a Bhagavat Saptaha, if he really has nice intelligence and good charisma, he can get tens and thousands of people coming. It's the power of the Bhagavatam. But if he's distorting it, very dangerous. So scientists like Darwin, taking a philosophy that's very, very powerful, but taking the soul out of it, which is the whole purpose of it, the transmigration of the soul, and take the soul out, and it makes people, what's supposed to make people understand why they should live in harmony with the laws of God, take the soul out, and people became atheists. They reject the concept of God as being unscientific, sentimental. It's very dangerous. Herein we find that
the subtle body is our state of consciousness. The false ego makes us identify with matter. The mind accepts, and the mind is just attracted and averse to all sorts of, you know, gross and subtle sensual experience. And the intelligence tries to discriminate. So when the intelligence is under the influence of the mind, which is under the influence of the senses, that is the cause of all suffering. That is the cause of all the complications within the whole cosmic manifestation. Therefore, Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita that there is no question of yoga without controlling the mind and senses. Yoga means the control of mind and senses. Now, today yoga is very, very popular all over the world. But the concept of yoga is to do some asanas, to do some pranayama, to get a clearer intellect and healthier, prettier body. But what they do not understand is before asana and pranayama are even followed in the proper yoga system, initially and simultaneously must be yama and niyama. And what is yama and niyama? It's controlling the mind. It's rules and regulations to develop your self-control and develop your character. Yes? Cleanliness, celibacy, following rules and regulations. That's the basis. Otherwise, if you're just doing yama, or if you're just, you know, performing yogic postures and doing pranayama, you may feel good and everything, but it's not really yoga. The actual system of yoga is to control the mind and to transform your lifestyle and your character. What is it that differentiates a human being from an animal? The willingness to control your mind and senses. That's all. Srila Prabhupada says, if you take food and you just put it out, an animal, if it's hungry, it's just going to go for that food. Yes? Now, what makes a human being is supposed to be invited. It's like if you're walking down the street with some food, you know, an animal might just come and take it out of your hand. But a human being will not do that. Similarly, sex life. For animals, they just do it. There's not really concern for control, but a human being, according to certain principles, must control their mind and senses. Now, certain domestic animals can be trained to restrain themselves out of fear. Yes? Wild animals, they don't control. They just, if a tiger is hungry and he sees you, he doesn't ask your permission. He just immediately jumps and eats you. Domestic animals can be trained to restrain, right? It's like, you know, you beat them a few times so they know they can't do this. They still want to do it, but they're afraid to do it. But a human being who's not willing to control their own mind and senses is not only an animal, it's a wild animal. not even on the level of a domesticated animal. So it is this controlling of the mind that is the basis of spiritual life. It's the foundation of yoga. And Krishna tells here that, Prabhupada tells here, at the time of death, whatever the position of the mind is, that becomes the cause of your next body. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram. So all the 8,400,000 species of life, they're all existing, and the soul is in that particular body due to a particular thought that was at the time of death. Human being is transported according to that thought. And then gradually it evolves up, up, up. Thus, Srimad Bhagavatam tells, the only real enemy is one's own mind. And it is explained that just as a hunter who catches a very deadly wild animal must be very vigilant to guard that animal, because the animal by its nature wants to escape and kill the hunter. Yes? It's like I heard recently there was news that there was a tiger in some American zoo and it escaped and ate somebody. Actually escaped and just charged into the zoo, and everyone was, all the little kids are eating their ice cream. Laughing, but it's a very serious thing. You know, the parents are saying, this is a monkey, and this is a tiger. And they're all eating cotton candies and ice cream and nice, you know, summer, not a summer day, well, wherever it was. And all of a sudden, this tiger just jumped out of its area and just killed somebody. Hare Krishna. Very big news all over the world about this. And now they're trying to find out who was at fault, why the tiger got out. And essentially the problem was they didn't take proper vigilance to keep that tiger in its place. Yes? And therefore, disaster, death. And actually, the zoo is just getting unbelievable bad press all over the world. Its reputation is very much destroyed. Who's going to want to go to that zoo and bring their children to eat cotton candy and when a tiger can get out? So just like a zookeeper must be very vigilant to keep the tigers in the cages, or a hunter must be very vigilant to keep the tiger in captivity, knowing that that tiger is always looking for any slight opportunity to escape and cause havoc. That animal is our mind. The mind is always looking for some way to escape the control of the intelligence and cause havoc. So one who is on the spiritual path must always be on guard of the mind. But we won't be on guard of the mind unless we understand its nature. It wants to kill our spiritual inclinations. And it will either do it quickly or gradually, whatever works. Yes? It's like a prisoner in a prison. Sometimes a prisoner, if the guards of the prison are not very alert, they'll just all of a sudden, you know, attack and run out, and then they're gone. Very quick, abrupt. But if the guards are more alert, there are histories where just little by little, over years, they'll somehow or other just start digging a little hole in the wall or something, and they'll be digging little tunnels. If it may take 5 years to make that tunnel so it can actually get outside, but it's happened. Little by little, day by day, just, you know, maybe a few inches every day, they're just getting closer outside that wall. Few inches, and ultimately, after maybe 10 years, there's instances of just digging those little tunnels. 10 years later, they're out. And what do they do when they're out? They do criminal activities. So the mind is like that. Either little by little, it's going to try to just somehow or other, just by getting you to deviate today and a little more tomorrow and a little more tomorrow, a little more tomorrow. The mind wants out of this Krishna consciousness. It wants out of this control of Krishna. Or it may just attack. That is the nature of the mind. So first of all, we must understand it. If you don't understand that a tiger is dangerous and it wants to escape, are you going to take precautions? No, you'll just, okay, tiger, you know, you're, good morning, do whatever you like. No, you're very much careful. Little inattentiveness could cause havoc and suffering. We must understand the uncontrolled mind to be our enemy. When you consider it your friend, you're really in danger. Because then you're easily exploited. So the mind will try to present the uncontrolled mind under the influence of Maya or illusion, will try to present himself as your friend. If you do this, you will be happy. Yes, yes. Everybody knows what. Hiranyakashipu, let us take him as example since he's the speaker of today's verse. He knows who Vishnu is. He knows what the soul is. He knows what the subtle body is. He's speaking beautifully about reincarnation here. He knows all of it. He knows what morality is. He knows what sinful activities are. His goal is to change the law of nature. The law of nature, when you sin, you suffer, and when you do pious things, you get happiness. Well, he wants to have the power to change that around. When you sin, you're happy, and when you do pious things, you have to suffer. That's his motivation. Yes?
And the demigods are the ones who are, you know, controlling nature in such a way to reap the results of your good and bad karma. So because he's controlling the demigods, he actually feels he has the power to reverse. The more you sin, the more you're going to get prosperity and nice things. And why? He knows philosophy. He's heard the words of the sages through the scriptures. But one problem, uncontrolled mind. Such an enemy wants to distort everything for its own purposes. So we must control the mind and the senses on all sides with good intelligence. And where does that good intelligence come from? It comes from association of people who have good intelligence. Otherwise, it's impossible, practically impossible. Arjuna, he admits that this controlling the mind, it's more difficult than controlling the wind. Who could control the wind? America is the wealthiest country in the world. Biggest, most, not the largest in size, but the most sophisticated, powerful military in the world. Such unbelievable technology and science and everything else. But we read about all these hurricanes and tornadoes that come. What do? They know the hurricane's coming. They know days in advance. It's not a surprise attack. It's on its way to a major city. Even with the help of all the money and technology of every other nation in the world, they cannot stop a hurricane. All their technology is just to get people out. That's it. Just get out of here. It's coming. Well, what about your technology? Well, we're using all our radios and all the technology and telecommunications and transportation to get you out of here. But they can't resist it. It's too powerful. There is no power of a human being to stop the hurricane, individually or collectively. Yes? The mind is more difficult than to control the hurricane. In other words, it's humanly impossible without the help of God. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharachara. Krishna says, with constant practice and detachment, we could control the mind. And ultimately, to control the mind for material purposes through constant practice and detachment, it's possible on a mundane level to some extent. But to control the mind from giving in to the illusory energy of Maya, Daiviheshu Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratyaya. The only possibility is practice and detachment on the path of devotional service. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains that if we just engage the mind in the loving service of the Lord, then our intelligence becomes purified. And as our intelligence becomes purified,
it actually finds shelter and direction from the Paramatma, the Super Soul. Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. And that is that is our goal. Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindayo. To just somehow or other keep the mind controlled by engaging it in Krishna's service. If we give the mind a higher activity to meditate on, to think about, and to engage the senses in, then only can the mind give up these lower propensities. Param drishtvani vartate. By giving the mind an experience of something higher. And that is why bhakti is so powerful. It's not just shutting off the mind, but it's engaging the mind. Impersonalist philosophy, voidist philosophy, they're trying to gradually bring the mind to the state of no mind. Just blank. But we see, even Vishwamitra Muni, even Sobari Muni, no one in this age of Kali could ever compete with them in regard to controlling the minds and senses. But even they fell victim to Maya. Somehow or other, that tiger, they built walls, thick walls, to keep that tiger in. Yes? But somehow or other, Vishwamitra Muni, can you imagine how he was controlling his mind? He could sit for thousands of years through rain, through heat, through cold, and not deviate from his meditation. Blazing fires with the summer sun on top of him, and he'd sit. Now us, our mind would be saying, get out of here. This is fanatical, get out of here. But he just, throughout the summer. All winter, he'd break the ice of the Ganges and the Himalayas and go up to his neck and stand for 4 months, no eating. Now the mind screaming for stuff, right? But Jesus, he really had that tiger of the mind under control. But because he didn't give the mind a higher taste, eventually it escaped. And what happened to poor Vishwamitra Muni? He got really entangled. Really entangled. But because he was a good person and everything, ultimately Ram came and saved him and he became a pure devotee. So the mind is like that. Unless we give it a higher experience, eventually it's going to run away from us. Ruya Krishtena Parampadam Tata. Even those who attain impersonal liberation, because they're not experiencing the higher taste of love which the soul needs. Even from the Brahma Jyoti, the spirit soul could come down under the captivity of the mind again. So somehow or other, to keep our mind connected to Krishna, to restrain tani saravani samyamya yukta asita matpara vasehi asyandriyani tasya pragya pratishtata. Krishna tells you must restrain the senses and fix the consciousness on me. These two things are very much required. Yatato hyapikonteya purushasya vipaschata indriyani pramatini haranti prashabam mana. The
The mind senses are so strong and impetuous that they can carry even the mind of a man of discrimination away. Therefore, we must restrain the senses and fix the consciousness on Krishna. And we must be very alert, very vigilant. Prabhupada said, unless we're chanting our 16 rounds attentively every day, at any moment, we could fall victim to Maya. So all these regulative principles of Krishna consciousness, which are actually very joyful if we just have the right attitude. Sitting and chanting our rounds could be a terrible austerity, or it could be a blissful experience. Krishna reciprocates according to how we approach him. A lot has to do with our attitude. Krishna, today I'm going to chant Hare Krishna to please you, to purify my mind. I know it's going to be difficult. I know it's going to be an austerity. I don't want to sit here and do so many other things. My mind wants so many places, so many things to say and do, but I'm going to do it for you, Krishna. If we actually have the right attitude, then it's a very, very fulfilling, wonderful experience. And that is why association is so important for us. Proper association keeps our perceptions clear. Bharat Maharaj, he didn't have good association. He was alone, and he was so advanced. He was on the state of bhava. He was weeping. His hairs were standing on end. That was his state. He actually had preliminary love of God. But even then, Maya knew just how to get him. Due to his compassionate nature, he got on the sentimental platform and became attached to a deer. And because he was thinking of a deer at the time of death, he became a deer in his next life. King Puranjan, because he was thinking about a woman at the time of death, he became a lady in his next life. So what you focus on, that consciousness is going to carry your subtle body to the next life. So Bharat Maharaj, if he just had some good association. Yes, one of his godbrothers would say, Bharat Prabhu. You know, if Govinda Prabhu was there. He'd say, Bharat Prabhu. You know, this, too much about this deer. You know, you can show compassion without becoming so attached. Right? Nobody was there, so his mind just carried him away. So association is very important. And social pressures are important. Some of the New Age ideas is forget all this control and discipline and social pressure and all this. Just be free. But the problem is they're not free. There's no possibility of being free. They're just slaves being dragged here and there by the mind. And who's controlling the mind? The illusory energy, Maya. Is that freedom? That is the misconception. Freedom is to be able to do what you like. But you're not doing what you like. Your soul doesn't like it. You're being dictated by the dictator of the mind. And the mind is telling you, you're free. Just like some dictators, they can exploit you like anything and tell you, you're free. And your stupid people are going to think, I'm free. And more intelligent people will want to revolt, and they're the ones who'll get punished. Yes? It's history of the world. So this mind is a demoniac dictator. If it's not in connection under the direction of the intelligence that's nourished by God. So this idea of freedom is nothing but the slavery of Maya. In order to actually be liberated, we must be liberated from the mind, from the polluted mind. And that is possible, especially and specifically, when we just keep the mind in harmony with the will of God. And in this age of Kali Yuga, where the mind is so difficult to control, the Lord has given us such an accessible process. Yes. We read about sages of previous yugas. For them to control the mind, they would sit for months and years at a time in one place without even moving their legs. Yes? Now, we're sitting for japa for an hour and a half. How many of you do not move your legs? What happens? Your leg starts going, and the mind is going, move it, no, headache, and finally, sometimes, at least I'll finish this round, then I'll move it. Well, they would just sit, and they mind-focused, samadhi, months, years at a time. That was the power that people had to control their minds in previous ages. But today, Kali Yuga, people's intelligence, their spiritual stamina is so weak. But there's one benediction. The full-fledged potency of God is within his name. Just chant. If you need to move your legs, move them. No problem. If you want to get up and walk and chant, then you can even do that. In fact, your Lord Chaitanya is so kind that, you know, you forget all the sitting. You know, you can even dance when you're chanting. Somehow or other, just keep your mind in the focus in the holy name. Keep your mind connected to Krishna. Therefore, this is the prime benediction for humanity at large. In every situation, anyone can keep their mind in Krishna simply by chanting the holy name. Some austerity is there. And if there wasn't some austerity, then there would be no expression of our devotion. So this restlessness of the mind for a devotee is actually a blessing. It's actually an opportunity to show that we're sincere. It's an opportunity to express our devotion. Are there any questions? or comments? Gopinath Chandra Prabhu, do you have any comments? Microphone. Is there any questions? Govinda Prabhu has a question.
Maharaj, you are mentioning about how Hiranyakashipu and others, they perverted the philosophy. And even though it was perverted, still it was very powerful. We also see in our situation as managers are dealing with certain specific circumstantial situation. Just to make the decision in our favor, we quite sometime quote Shastra, Niti, and other scriptures, and prove others that my point of view is right because I'm quoting from the Shastra. But we know in the heart of our heart, actually I'm just simply justifying and using the scripture also. So how to avoid this tendency and present everything so transparent that we are not affected by this justification through Shastra and pervert the philosophy.
Give an example, please.
My thinking is stopped, Maharaj.
If you know that it's not right, then your integrity will be based on your speaking and acting according to what you know is correct. Because this sort of misrepresentation of the Word of God to fulfill some ulterior motive could lead to such deviation. Yes? Ultimately, all of our spiritual advancement is based on how we please Krishna. So in our management, if we're speaking and doing things that are displeasing to Krishna, we will lose his blessing, we will lose his grace. And will we succeed? In Krishna consciousness, ultimately management is about making decisions that is going to access Krishna's blessing and Krishna's mercy, because that's where our success is. Otherwise, it's, as they say, penny wise and pounds foolish. Shreyas and prayas. We may get something done now, but in the future, things are going to collapse miserably. Because we're just setting the wrong standard. So good management has to see the whole picture, not just one little immediate part. Every part should be seen in relation to the whole. That's what management really is in Krishna consciousness. The future of any devotee's spiritual life and the future of the whole mission is based on how we are inspiring, empowering people in a way that is pleasing to Krishna. Yes? So if we are misrepresenting Krishna's words, we may get something done now. But you may be creating a culture that's full of very, very dangerous deviations in the future. From a practical perspective. And from a spiritual perspective, you're not going to have Krishna's blessings. And this is oftentimes what happens. Devotees quote scripture to get something done, sometimes for themselves, to make things easier for themselves, even sometimes for sense gratification for themselves. Devotees have also have quoted scripture to exploit people. But usually such a person, the mind is such a cheater that it actually convinces you that actually you're doing the right thing. But there will be no auspicious future. So management is serious responsibility. And when we're quoting Krishna's words, it's a serious responsibility. That we're quoting Krishna's words in such a way to fulfill Krishna's will, not our own separate will. So how to refrain from doing those things? By understanding the whole picture. And how we, in the name of service, we could be doing some effective service immediately, but we may be doing a massive disservice eventually. Does that answer your question? Still, we're waiting for your example. Is there any other question? Gauranga Kishore Prabhu.
You were speaking about how, in regards to controlling the mind, how social pressure, it can also be a positive way of keeping people's minds under control. Could you explain that point a little further? Within ISKCON's history, you've seen that sometimes there was an unhealthy kind of social pressure, or maybe there wasn't, I don't know. According to modern sociology or psychology, they give the opposite perspective. So how do we know if a type of pressure is healthy or unhealthy, or how do we find the balance?
Mahat sevam dwaram ahurava muktes tamo dwaram yoshita sanghi sangam. By associating materialistic people, the doors to ignorance are opened because of the social pressures of being with those people. And by serving the will and associating with great souls, the doors to liberation are open. That is a law of nature. What we associate with, the pressures that come from that association, will be what constitutes our consciousness. So we see what kind of social pressures are in this material world. Who wants to smoke cigarettes? It's all social pressure. It's a miserable thing. Just yesterday, I was listening to Prabhupada talking about smoking cigarettes. Prabhupada, there's a cigarette called Cool. And there's Prabhupada sees this advertisement where
there's beautiful waterfalls and fresh green trees. Man and a woman are going, this feels so cool. Prabhupada said, because of the social pressure? You're putting fire in your mouth and they're telling you it's cool and it's refreshing and you think it is. That's the power of social pressure. People are, then you become addicted due to social pressure. So unless there's positive social pressure, we're going to be victim to all the negative social pressures that are around us. So social pressure is healthy when it is directed by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Yes? Even amongst devotees, there can be very, very unhealthy social pressure. There can be social pressure that leads you to be a fanatic. There could be social pressure that leads you to be a thief, to be dishonest, if that's the way people are living. Yes? Even amongst devotees. Because we all still have our anartas. Just because we're in the society of devotees, it doesn't mean all the social pressures are going to be good. It's a question of whether we are following the dictations of Guru and Krishna, or we're following the dictations of our own past conditionings. Yes? So we want the social pressures that help us to get up for Mangal Arati, that help us to chant the holy names sincerely every day, that help us to follow these regulative principles of no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. That's going to help us to be enthusiastic to serve. That's going to help us to be humble and respectful. Now the mind wants to do so many other things. When everybody around has a nice service attitude and they're expecting you to, it makes it much easier for the mind to do it. Yes? So good association is such a priceless blessing. When everyone around is doing something else, the mind's tendency is to do that too. So it makes it very, very difficult. So we could know what good social pressure is just by reading Srila Prabhupada's books and understanding nicely. Is it helping me to be more strict in my sadhana? Is it helping me to be more humble and enthusiastic in my service attitude? Is it helping me to have more higher moral integrity? And it's wonderful. During the December marathon of books, due to social pressure, so many people went out. Probably most of the people who went out, it was due to social pressure. Yes? But almost everyone was in bliss when they were out, but what brought them out was the social pressure. Otherwise, why don't they go out the rest of the year? Practically none of you go out the rest of the year, only December, because it was so much massive social pressure. Nobody was forcing anyone to, but because everyone was doing it, everyone else wanted to do it. Yes? So that's very nice. Does that answer your question?
Radhe Shyam Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for the very enlightening and enlivening
class. Radhe Shyam Prabhu is very expert at creating social pressure. Very healthy, disciplined social pressure. Yes.
Maharaj, in our Vaishnava philosophy, we make fine line differences even between Uddhava and the Brajavasis, and even between Uddhava and Maitreya. You know, even in exalted stages, there are finer levels of advancement, one over the other, like that. And even between the sampradayas and different groups which follow the Vaishnava philosophy, every category claims uniqueness of its own, as well as often superiority over the other. And still I find that the very advanced, exalted Vaishnavas, like I read in one place in BTG, some devotees had published the article about Vallabhacharya, and later on Prabhupada scolded the devotees, and then he gave a very nice reply to Sumati Morarji. So I find that a fraction of very advanced Vaishnavas will know the differences, at the same time be very broad-minded. But when it comes down to the grass level of disciples of different gurus or different sampradayas or even different temples, so how you could give us some guideline how one can see the commonality in the Vaishnava culture, and though one may belong to certain category, Maharaj, because I feel that at the gross level, you were explaining in the beginning of your talk today about I and mine and the enmity. Actually, I have not included at all the pseudo philosophies and the Mayavad and Buddhist and other types of philosophies at all. I am talking only within the purview of the Vaishnava circle. So while living with all these differences, I find that in Vaishnava philosophy, sometimes the demarcation is so sharp. I heard that Raghunath Das Goswami would not even drink the buttermilk from Sakistali, the place of Chandravali. So while marking such a sharp discrimination, how can one be broad-minded? You can kindly enlighten us, Maharaj.
Raghunath Das Goswami. Never criticized Chandravali. Yes? He ultimately honored her position as an expansion of Srimati Radharani in Krishna's service. Goloka Vrindavan, but he was simply completely, on a personal level, completely faithful to his service to Rupa Goswami and Srimati Radharani. Yes? So in the same way, and this is the fine line, we should be faithful to our own path, even despite so many temptations and everything else. We should be completely faithful to our own path. But within Vaishnav circles, we should be completely respectful to honor other people who are faithful to their path. Yes? Raghunath Das Goswami was not blaspheming or fighting against the followers of Chandravali. But he was completely faithful to his service to Sri Radharani. Yes? Ultimately, he understands that Radharani and Chandravali are simply doing, they're all both existing only for the pleasure of Krishna. So there may be different sampradayas. There may be different spiritual preceptors within each sampradaya. And we should be faithful to our line, because that is how we're going to make spiritual progress. We may honor the Sri Sampradaya, the Nimbark Sampradaya, Ramanuja Sampradaya, Vishnu Swami Sampradaya, we may honor the Madhva Sampradaya as it stands in South India, but we are followers of Gaudiya Sampradaya. Yes? May we understand the special gift of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Special, most elevated gift. But in other sampradayas, they do not understand that special gift. But they're in a path that's going to take them back home, back to Godhead. Yes? So we honor them, but we follow our own path. And amongst spiritual masters, you'll please Krishna if you're faithful to your guru. It's not a matter of other gurus may or may not be as advanced or more advanced or less advanced. If the guru is properly within parampara and Krishna has given you faith and Krishna has given you that connection, if you're faithful, that's the way you're going to please Krishna and make spiritual progress. It's not a question of competition. The faith you have in your guru, Krishna has inspired in somebody else toward another guru. So who are you to dictate to Krishna where people's faith should be? So we should be open and we should be respectful toward other Vaishnavas, but at the same time, we should be faithful. The tendency is extremes. The tendency is to be respectful to other gurus means we give up our loyalty to our own and just start, you know, surrendering to everybody. Right? And we see that's very common. And the other extreme is everybody else is bogus. Only mine can go take you to Goloka. Yes, two extremes. They're both offensive. The middle path that pleases Krishna is to be completely faithful, loyal to the line God has given us, but at the same time, honor the connection that others have. That takes a certain amount of maturity. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada, because he saw such immense immaturity, he said, only listen to me, nobody else. Because he saw that the tendency is devotees just want to explore and take from everywhere. And then there's no loyalty, there's no obedience, there's no focus. And it's harmful for their own spiritual lives. But in a mature state, we could offer all honor and all respects to all other gurus and all other sampradayas, but at the same time, we're completely faithful. Does that answer your question?
In fact, we were fortunate to see you, how you deal with different Sri Vaishnavas and even with Vijayavasis and different sects very expertly. And that gives us a lot of inspiration, Maharaj. Maharaj, can I ask another small question, Maharaj? One more small question.
Oh. We may be giving honor to all of these different sectors of Vaishnavas. We may be worshipping them as Vaishnavas. But the question is that deviating us from our service to Prabhupada? If it isn't, then it's very healthy and very satisfying to Krishna. Yes?
Yes, Maharaj. As recently I was reading in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the son of Prithu Maharaj, who is called as Vijitashva, so he saw Indra stealing the horse in the sacrificial arena, and he did not kill him because he had transformed his form into looking like a saintly person. And later on, Indra becomes pleased with him and gave him the name Antardhana and also gave him a benediction that he can disappear and all. Because Indra was happy that he didn't kill me, you know, like that. And later on, when Vijitashu becomes a king, he could not exact taxes from the people because he was a bit lenient with the people. And in the pretext of performing sacrifices, he had an early retirement and he went to forest because he didn't want to force the people to give taxes. And then I read that, and very soon he perfected his life and he went back home, back to Godhead. So this was a bit shocking to me because when I, it seems that if somebody is a bit lenient and even maybe popular amongst people who are not following everything up to the mark, up to the expectation of what the Shastras are saying, still such leniency and is considered all right in comparison to someone who would forcefully see to it that the things are done the proper way, you know, on behalf of the Supreme Lord as a representative. Because sometimes in the course of executing the things the way they should be on behalf of the Supreme Lord, while doing that, sometimes the firmness creates irritability in the hearts of people. It creates fear, as rightly said in the beginning today. That was a very enlightening point, that it's very easy to earn the fear and respect of the people, but not love of the people. You know, he was saying that. So someone who is doing that may earn the fear and respect of people, but people may not love him, you know, because of the kind of, you know, force. So when I compare these two things, it seems to me that sometimes it is better to be lenient and go back to Godhead and not earn the offenses of, you know, we don't commit offense to devotees, than be very rigid like the in many other sections of Bhagavatam we find. And it will be taken as an offense by the people. And people lose love for the person. Rather, it only instills fear in the hearts of people. So I wanted to know about it.
Sometimes you should be more lenient. Does that answer your question? Yeah. And sometimes you should be more strict also. We have to use our good intelligence. And our good intelligence should be built on a foundation of proper motives. Now, those motives are developed through hearing and chanting, through hearing the glories of the Lord and chanting the holy names of the Lord, and through our own service attitude. Krishna gives us the intelligence if we're taking to the process in our own lives without ulterior motives. That's really where realizations come from. To the degree we're following the process of Krishna consciousness, specifically hearing and chanting and rendering services without ulterior motives, then through those 9 processes of devotional service, Krishna will give us realizations. And of course, we should consult others who have higher realizations than ourselves. And then when we are managing devotees, sometimes strictness is very necessary, sometimes leniency is very necessary. We have to know how to use each one. Yes? If we're just addicted to strictness, or we're just conditioned and addicted to leniency, we're going to be doing disservice in certain times and circumstances. Prabhupada would say, do the needful. Do what works. And Prabhupada was such an example. Sri Chaitanya, Sri Nityananda Prabhu, all the acharyas, we find so many examples. of where they can be very strict and where they could be very lenient. Yes? If our strictness is suffocating a person, making it very impossible for a person, oppressive to a person, you're not helping his bhakti grow. It could be, in the name of Krishna consciousness, it could be doing just the opposite. It could be killing his bhakti. At the same time, if we're too lenient, we could be killing a person's bhakti. So we have to use our intelligence according to the kala desha patra, the time, the place, and the person. In Prabhupada's lectures, he was always very strict. Govinda Prabhu was speaking about this so excellently yesterday. I listened to the whole class. That sometimes, in order to keep a person in Krishna consciousness, to encourage them, he could be very lenient personally with a person. But in his lectures, Prabhupada was quite strict. He did not compromise. Yes? Prabhupada would do the needful. Sometimes Prabhupada would come and say, "Where are all the devotees?" Say, "They're sleeping." Prabhupada once said, "Sleep is worse than illicit sex, oversleeping, because it puts you in the mode of ignorance." Other time a devotee's sick, Prabhupada says, "You need more sleep. You should sleep nicely." Yes. So Prabhupada, according to what would help that devotee grow, that's what's all important. We should be considering the individual as well as the congregation around them. We should consider, we don't deviate from the philosophy, but how to present the philosophy with strictness or leniency in a way that will help that person to grow. If we're just fixed on one or the other, and we're conditioned and habituated to one or the other, then we're going to disempower, uninspire, and hurt devotees' lives. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I'm sorry I went so long, I didn't realize.